Hello and welcome to Platforms for Future. This podcast is about building and scaling B2B platform ventures to help you to accelerate and de-risk your journey with practical tips and insights. In our conversations, we talk to founders, executives, and experts, uncovering what they experienced and learned building their ventures. But we also cover new trends like ecosystem strategies, IoT and data platforms, Web3 and sustainability. This podcast is complementary to our Platform Innovation Kit toolset and the Platform Academy, where you can find more tools and learning opportunities for you and your team. For more information, please visit platforminnovationkit.com. And now, enjoy today's conversation.
Hello, welcome everybody to a new episode of our podcast, Platforms for Future. And with me, my lovely co-host, Natalie. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Matthias. Lovely to be here again.
Yes, and I'm also very excited that we have two guests today. We have Markus and Matthias. Hello, Markus, and hello, Matthias.
Hello.
Hello.
Both are part of the largest applied research organization in Germany, the Fraunhofer, and they work very well together with the German Mittelstand, or so-called SMEs, small, medium-sized companies, to help them to build new platforms. And today we want to talk about what are the key success factors for those Mittelstand companies to really succeed in the battle against those bigger corporations and bigger platforms already out there. So hello, Markus. Hello, Matthias. Maybe before we go into the details in our conversation, can you give a short, briefly intro to our guests, who you are and what you are doing at Fraunhofer, and also a bit of background, what Fraunhofer exactly is?
Okay, thanks for having us here. So my name is Markus Trapp. I work at the Fraunhofer Institute for Experimental Software Engineering, IESE in German, or IESE in English. We are based in Kaiserslautern. Maybe I talk first a bit about myself and then about Fraunhofer. So I'm a computer scientist. I studied in Kaiserslautern. I'm working for Fraunhofer for almost 20 years now. And at our institute, we deal with innovation systems and software engineering. That's important to tell because the Fraunhofer Gesellschaft in German consists of over 70 institutes, and each one is specialized in a specific area, and usually an engineering area. So we are the largest applied research organization in whole Europe, and we differ from research organizations like Max Planck or University Research, as we are doing applied research, so that the things we are dealing with should be applicable by the industry more or less directly. And Max Planck organizations or universities usually deal with base research. So this is an important research to be done, of course, but usually not applicable directly from industry. And that's why applied research is also necessary. And therefore, Fraunhofer was built over 70 years ago. And currently we have over 70 institutes in Germany. So this is also a running gag. Sometimes in the news, we see this is Professor X Epsilon, Professor Müller from the Fraunhofer Institute. This is always wrong because he's either from Fraunhofer or he is from a specific institute, as we are from Fraunhofer IEC in Kaiserslautern. So personally, myself, I studied computer science, but I'm specialized in user experience and in the last years, especially in the ideation phase. So actually, you could say the ideation phase. So talking with customers about what things could be done with IT is actually not a part of software engineering at all. You could say that, but we saw it's absolutely necessary to build up this competence at our institute, as we realized that our customers like it very well, that if they play around with ideas for future things to do, it's important for them that these people, where they are dealing with in this ideation phase actually know about the further steps, and that they can trust that the ideas they are playing around can actually be built, and they have a technical expertise with them. But I hand over to Matthias, and he can maybe add also a bit about our institute and Fraunhofer.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm Matthias Knaap. Also, thank you very much for having me in here today. I'm also a computer scientist with a more technical background than Markus has. I started very much in the area of software architecture, building and evaluating large-scale systems, renovating them. And roughly 6-7 years ago, we move more into the direction of this platform economy and digital ecosystem area. And currently I'm heading there at the Fraunhofer IEC, the division of digital ecosystem engineering, which exactly deals with the engineering activities and the discipline and the combination of disciplines that are necessary to build these platforms and digital ecosystems that we are currently talking about.
Maybe one thing to add to also lead us to our topic today is that the main task of the Fraunhofer organization is to keep the German and European industry competitive or make them competitive. And of course, this means, especially in Germany, to deal with small and medium-sized companies. Of course, we have some very successful large companies in Germany, but the most of our companies are small and medium-sized companies. This is the backbone of Germany, as it's so-called many times. And that's why I think this is a good translation to our topic today.
And just before we jump into it, for just a bit more context, Matthias, can you give it just a tiny bit more information about what you call ecosystems engineering, so that we can
Yes.
then get into the concrete?
Of course. And maybe it's also about the combination of these terms, digital ecosystems and platforms, because this is often mixed up in industry, but also in research. And of course, there is not the single one correct definition, but we worked quite a time to come up with something that is at least consistent and somehow meets the intuitive understanding. And I can try to give that briefly here. So with digital ecosystems, we mean socio-technical systems comprised of organizations, people, and technical parts where the participants are free, so to say. They are not forced to be in there. They are there on their own will, but they expect mutual benefit from being part of that digital ecosystem. And in the center of a digital ecosystem, there's always kind of a central entity, so the ecosystem initiator and operator who brings that ecosystem into life. The ecosystems don't just happen, they are established. And in this central area, there's always a digital platform. And this digital platform is handling all the collaboration among all the ecosystem participants. And in this digital platform, there is one or more central ecosystem service, and this is purely digitally provided. So I give you a brief example. If you think, for example, about Airbnb, then Airbnb, the company, provides the ability that they broker accommodation possibilities from private hosts to travelers. And the brokering is a purely digital activity, and this is done by the over the platform of Airbnb. And there now we have the platform term, and the digital ecosystem is the whole thing around it, where we have all the participants providing, consuming, and being there together, everyone participating and benefiting. And our digital ecosystem engineering now is all the activities that come together to bring these things into life from the first idea to operation, so to say.
Oh, very well, good definition. So we should cut this out and put this on our website as an extra audio file. Very well explained. Thank you for that. Coming to the core of our conversation. So we said, okay, how can we do, how can we make the Mittelstand and the SMEs competitive regarding platforms? And so what is from your point of view, the status quo of the economy? Is the Mittelstand, are the SMEs far behind, no chance anymore to do anything against the big players, or are they more advanced than we think? So what is from your point of view and from your experience right now in working with them, the status quo of the economy?
I would say they are not left behind in the sense that they don't have a chance anymore, but the traditional established companies are at the moment not in the leading position, definitely, I would say. Most of them are somehow observing the situation. They become slowly aware that things are necessary to be done. Of course, they are not all equal. That's also clear. That there are some that are really far. But we know also in the traditional machine engineering, Maschinenbau, we know companies that even do not want to talk about these things. And that's, of course, problematic because it's closing the eyes and waiting what happens. But there's a big diversity how companies look at that. What we also have to say is that companies always can be in different positions regarding ecosystems. They could look at this, the overall market and situation and think about becoming participants of an ecosystem who can be built by any other company, by a Silicon Valley company, but also by other German SME companies. Or they could be more in a driver's seat position and say, I would really like to establish something. I would like to get a leading player in that market. And there, unfortunately, we are not seeing so many companies at the moment who really dare to do that and really started this journey. When we have SME companies that are doing that at the moment in Germany, we often see newly established startups. Of course, they are also somehow SMEs, that's clear. But I think when you talk about SMEs in your question, you think more about the established ones, the one that we might want to preserve from an overall German perspective. And yeah, there's, I think, a lot to do, but it's not lost.
We also think that this whole ecosystems economy is really actually a sweet spot for SMEs because they've got a lot of assets to leverage. Yet the thinking is, oh, it's for digital giants or startups. It doesn't apply to SMEs. So what would you say the barriers are? Maybe maybe the understanding of this first, but there might be other ones. What have you identified?
So I would say you're absolutely right with the statement that you just did. They are hesitant to go into that direction. And actually, it's hard to understand why. Because usually, if you look at the small and medium-sized companies in Germany, they have most of them are still private-owned. Yeah, there's a strong owner beyond that founded this company maybe some decades or at least some years ago. And usually, they were really innovative at that point in time when they founded their company. So they have this spirit of doing something maybe crazy new in their domain. They have this spirit, yeah, but they are hesitant to do this in the digital domain. And I think it's exactly the way as you said. They think, oh, this is not our business. But we also see another thing that these companies think they need to redefine their whole market to build such an ecosystem. I give you an example. They think they have to redefine the whole medical domain into a new digital ecosystem or the whole construction domain. And this is absolutely not true if you look what these companies are actually doing, even the successful one. Oh, maybe that's another point we should point out. If you look at the established published successful digital ecosystems coming from the United States or from Asia. They were usually, or almost all of them, were not founded by the big established companies that were already there. They all started at small startups there and became these big giants. Even the IT companies, they are not big, successful digital ecosystem established by Microsoft, Dell, or General Electric, or something like that.
Yeah, you also pointed out a very good point that there's maybe a misunderstanding from those Mittelstand players to maybe I need to transform my whole business into a completely new business. But this is also kind of wrong, as you pointed out. So when you look at the big players like Apple and so, they are still making 80% of their profit by producing hardware and products, and 20-30% on their portfolio are based on then those kind of transactional based revenues. And so this is also something when we talk to the Mittelstand, we need to tell them you need to increase the portion of your portfolio which is based on transactional revenues and not completely transform your business.
You're absolutely right. And we also think a big problem is that even ourselves, when we explain and use examples, we usually talk about the B2C, business to consumer things. And especially the German small and medium-sized companies, they are usually in the B2B market and they're successful. And they say, oh, this is nothing for us. Yeah. But we think a really good example to look at is Schüttflix. Yeah, if you look at Schüttflix, they do so many things really, really well. Yeah, they are addressing their customer groups very well. And what they did is they said, okay, let's start small. Okay, we are in just to introduce Schüttflix for people who don't know Schüttflix. What they are doing is, as Matthias said, of course they are brokering something. Yeah, when they are establishing a digital ecosystem, they are brokering bulk material like sand. Or some things that are provided by construction material suppliers for construction companies. If you are building, for example, streets, yeah, or the Autobahn, it's still a problem that this bulk material is delivered in the wrong quality at the wrong time and are placed at the wrong position of the construction site. This is still a problem. And what Schüttflix identified that problem and said, okay, we want to do something in this construction domain, but they didn't start it to reinvent the whole construction industry, but they said, okay, this is a service, this is still a problem that this bulk material is delivered in time, in quality, and for an acceptable price. And that's what they did. Just providing this small service in a quality that nobody else could provide at the moment. And if we use such an example and show this to small and medium-sized companies, they say, okay, this is something that we could came up with. Yeah, this is not such a crazy thing like Uber or Airbnb or something like that. This is something that we can understand, and we could find such things in our domain. Yeah, and start small.
So they are, just to understand properly, they are providing a service to enable that the right material is delivered at the right place on the right time. Is that?
In the right quality, yeah.
And as you said, they started small. So we understand from the conversation so far, there are different positions you can have in an ecosystem. You need to find out which one you want to play. Second, you also said, okay, you need to start and you need to initiate. So from this point of view, are there any reasons or what is holding back the small, medium companies to start this journey? Matthias?
I would like to, of course, there might be more, but I would like to point out two here. One is referring back to Natalie. She said it in a side sentence. Maybe they don't understand it well enough. And that's something that we see all the time when we have conversations with companies. And therefore, I would like to emphasize this a bit more. that there is so much misunderstandings behind all these terms of ecosystems and platforms and how all these things are mixed up and what it is, because both terms are highly overstressed. Yeah? So nearly everything is named a platform or an ecosystem, even things that are out there for a long time. And so companies and people get lost, and they also don't find the right language with each other, with their partners, and even inside their own company. And we worked with many companies that talked over months and even years about that without coming up with this idea. Yeah, you mentioned this idea, Matthias, and they even can't bring this idea to the point where they can start, just because they are lost in all this terminology thing. And there we also try to do a lot by publishing webinars and articles and definitions and so on. We never claim that this is absolute truth, but it helps people to find themselves and maybe to form their own definition. My second point that I would like to make here is also about financing all that stuff. So even if you start small, you have you have to take into account that it can get expensive. When you really want to make it bigger and you want to scale it and you want to come up with that size where you can become profitable, there you have to come up with quite a big business, because you have only a small margin in that business when you have these transactions. And that typically means that your return of invest, the positive return on invest and your break even comes quite late. So we often hear, yeah, we would like to get profitable after 12 or 18 months. And for all we know, that's nearly impossible to reach. You rather have to take a time frame of more than 5 or even 10 years into account. When you really scale it up and you get the business big, then it becomes really, really profitable. But you don't know whether you ever reach that point, and you really need the patience. And for that patience, you need money. And this is something that I would like to explain a bit more here when you look at the Mittelstand and the SMEs. Because as Markus said, there are traditional companies, often there's still the founder in there and they are making good money. But if they take all the risk to put their money in this new business model and try to grow that, this might ruin their old company. And this is something, when they understand that point, they of course are cautious. And there we need models to distribute that risk, so to say. And that is also where the difference to startups are, is, that start really small and with only the founders. They nearly never can come up with the whole financing of their endeavor from their own. They need external capital, like from venture capitalists. And they have the possibility to distribute the risk over many of these companies, while the owner of an SME company necessarily can't do that directly. And that is something where we have to find different models to distribute the risk also for these companies. And that is something where we could also talk about how maybe different players could come together and take the risk together. So that might be a follow-up discussion for today.
Dear listeners, I hope you enjoy our podcast and you can learn more about building and scaling a successful platform business. I'm Matthias, CEO of Fastbreak One. And as you know, we at Fastbreak One are platform entrepreneurs by heart. Since over 20 years, we are building new platforms, and this makes us one of the most experienced platform venture builders around the globe. If you are a corporate and you tried out different strategies, consultants, IT partners, but your platform initiative struggles to scale, please check out our assessment services. For example, we work closely together with a leading insurance company who tried to establish a platform for 2 years, but the results were below expectations and the risk to fail was very high. Within 1 month, we helped them to understand the bottlenecks and created a step-by-step plan to scale. Today, we are working very closely with the company and the platform became a market leader. Yes, we are no consultants. We are entrepreneurs and we love to share the risk and go full in building new platform ventures. Learn more about our experience and our practices of work at our website www.fastbreak.one or send us an email to contact@fastbreak.one. And now let's go back to the conversation.
In fact, there's kind of two sub-points in what you said in my mind. They are linked, obviously, but it's one, the financing strategy and access to funding, and two, the ROI, which, okay, they are linked, but it's kind of two topics. And so I've got two questions, or one question and one remark. On the ROI, what would you say to what I hear all the time? Oh, but platforms don't earn any money. Look at Airbnb, look at Uber, they're burning cash and they never earn any money. That's the first on the ROI. So I've got my opinion, but I want to ask you. And the second one, which maybe might lead us into what are the options to structure that access to financing and financing strategy, whether it's working with venture studios, working through with other partners in an ecosystems or both, in essence, working a bit like a startup. Two topics, maybe the shorter one is the ROI and then the other one we can dig into a little bit more.
Yeah, with the ROI, I would say there you have to look a bit behind the scenes because many of these platform companies are still strongly in their growth phase and invest a lot of their money into new ecosystem services, which of course consumes another hell of money. If you look at Airbnb, for example, they have not only the Airbnb accommodation brokering, but they also dealing with experiences and so on. They try to make the overall business bigger, more successful, and therefore they invest everything they earn. It's not that they are not making money, but they might not be in the black numbers yet. Yeah? And if you look at Uber, for example, it's really extreme. They had, I don't know whether they still have, but I think they had more than 10,000 people working in other areas like autonomous driving and so on. And with that, even being not productive, you can't get a positive ROI already. And that's something that you always have to analyze when you look at that. Amazon, not a pure platform company, they always had also this attitude to reinvest everything that they earned. But at some point in time, they made a hell of a lot of money. And then everybody wondered at this point in time. So that can go very fast then. And other companies are not in the position to catch up then anymore, if they have such a big head start.
Yeah, very good points you mentioned, and there are multiple points. I try to summarize them a bit. So first you said, okay, there's a big question marks for the companies to understand what are platforms and ecosystems, so their basic understandings. Second is also, you said, how to approach that and the expectations they have. So sometimes they said, okay, it's they compare building a platform tower compared to building up a new product line. So it needs to be, there needs to be a positive ROI within 12 to 18 months, but it takes more years to become profitable as a platform because you invest a lot in network effects first. And this takes more time instead of building a product and bring it to market and whatever. But the potentials are much higher. So also in our research, we found out that it takes usually 5 years for platforms to become really profitable. And this is mainly because they need to go into competition against the other players in the market and invest a lot in marketing and so on, not about the product itself, but positioning yourselves very well. And the third point you also mentioned regarding the financing thing, I find really interesting is like maybe, as you said, these startups, they look for the next 12 months, bring something to market, and then they look for finding a new investor. And maybe most of the companies, they said, I need to invest everything by myself. And so they maybe approach it differently compared to startups. Because startups, I bring it to market and then I will find an investor to finance me the next round and the next 12 months or 18 months. But the company maybe said, I don't have the money now for the next 3 years, so I don't want to start everything. So maybe more looking at building a platform more from a venture perspective, really like looking into or thinking in financing around, would this also help for companies to approach this? And maybe also thinking about who else I can bring in as a co-investor?
Yeah, I guess this would be definitely a good idea to partner. So several small and medium companies could join their efforts. They are maybe from the same domain, or maybe they're even from completely different domains, and they combine their skill sets that they have to found something completely new. That's definitely the idea. But also, Matthias, what you suggested is definitely a good idea. Even if I'm an established, successful, small and medium-sized company, I could think like a startup and go into the venture capital direction. Why not? Of course, I will not own all of the new services or company or whatever form this would take, but why not? Yeah, and I think they are thinking too traditional here.
I would like to add on that, Markus, because I think we should even phrase this more positively in this combination, because for the first 2 years, most of the successful SME companies, they can clearly afford to make that, and they can afford to make the start. They can position it. They can market it already, and they can see whether it works in the market. And they can also do it quite fast because they are often family owned. They are in a position to decide fast, like a startup, and to just make it, maybe with an internal division that can strongly focus on that and only work on that, not distributed over the whole company.
It is a big advantage against the big successful companies in Germany, because they are so slow in doing these things. This is a very, very big advantage from the small and medium-sized companies. Yeah.
And then after that point in time, they can see how to proceed, whether they can get external funding and give out shares, so to say, of that business to others, or whether they are so successful that they believe so much in it that they put further own money in it. I think in that sense, they are even in a very good position, because they have the starting money on their own side. They do not have to get the seed investment from external, and they can just start. So you can put it more negatively or in that sense more positively, but we would like to encourage more of these SMEs, the successful companies of Germany, to really try that and to build up a good position quite fast.
So this is also a good point. So the small, medium companies, they are owned by a family or whatever. So it's a family owned business, and they can make decisions much, much faster than compared to the bigger ones with a lot of politics in the background and making them very slow. But you also mentioned maybe forming an alliance with another small, medium company could be of a benefit, but would be forming an alliance not counter or against this kind of fast decision making opportunity if you are owning it by yourself? So what do you think? What should I do as a small medium company? Should I do it by myself? Should I form an alliance? So or how do you see this?
It would be really, really nice if we could give you a really good answer to that question. But unfortunately, we see successful stories of things where they did it on their own in as a department, as a project within their company. They formed a startup on their own. They formed an alliance. Yeah, there are successful success stories here, but there are also miss success stories with the same thing. Yeah. So it depends. I know this is a very bad answer. This is a standard software engineering answer. It depends. But unfortunately, it's really true in this situation.
To make this, it depends a bit less bad. I have at least one criterion that supports this alliancing, Matthias. And sometimes we see situations where companies say, if I would establish that ecosystem, I would need all my competitors to take part in that ecosystem, but they will not if I'm the initiator or the owner of the ecosystem. And if we have that situation, then building an alliance is a very good option, because they can found it together. Typically, they establish a completely new company under a new name and brand. And then they all have the shares. Of course, that makes it in some sense slower, but you have then to give that company also the freedom to decide without always asking all the alliance members, and just do the things and only have regular board meetings or whatever you establish. And one company that that does this and that we know very well is Caruso, the Caruso Database GmbH. The members are not really the very small ones. There are also smaller ones, but there is also Bosch and Continental and ZF and others in there. It's the members of the Tech Alliance. And there are the really big ones that I just mentioned, but there are also smaller ones that you might definitely count under the SMEs. And they came up also with this alliance idea, so that they had a neutral entity, so to say, that is speaking in all their names to canalize the data that is coming from car manufacturers, but also from other sources, and that can be then brokered and used for services that rely on vehicle telematics data. And I think that's a good example for this alliance approach.
Makes me think of two things. The first one is you mentioned neutrality. I always talk about trust. I think this is a huge stake for digital ecosystems going forward. And in fact, indeed, the more you manage to give a neutral positioning, the more attractive you are. I know of some platforms where, you know, some companies just don't want to touch them because they have been created by so and so. So co-building within an ecosystem, maybe with your competitors, a platform is also, bearing in mind you've got the right governance, but it's also appearing more neutral and more being more neutral and more trustworthy. I think the danger of being slow because you've got a big governance can be mitigated by orchestrating, engineering that proper governance, so that the executive team has got leeway and decision power, etc. But it's a very very powerful thing. You mentioned Caruso. In France, we've got a platform called Bien Ici.com. It's a real estate platform, and they got together with 13 competitors in real estate. They build it together, and now they are competing with the biggest, largest real estate companies in France. So it can be very powerful. They created a different brand, like you said. The governance is well engineered, but the fact that there are several seems more complex, and maybe it is at the beginning, but I think it has a lot of virtues.
Definitely. Distrusting is very important, and this comes directly with this neutrality and not wanting another player to be the dominant player in my business. And this is something when you position yourselves, then you become a broker of something where you are on your own, also a provider, so to say. Then it always gets a bit dangerous, because all the other providers might be suspicious in the sense that you are preferring yourself on the platform when delivering to consumers. And there are players that are quite successful with that, like Amazon with its marketplace. Yeah, the marketplace and the Amazon webshop is completely intertwined, and you as a user even have difficulties to see where it comes from. But they established first their normal warehouse, and then they added the marketplace and gave the chance for others to participate. And as they were so dominant, they just could make it, but the others often hate it also. Yeah, we all know that.
Again, I think this is actually a mindset advantage, because SMEs will more easily understand or accept that they're not necessarily the dominant one, whereas very big brands, they tend to absolutely want to keep their brands and be the dominant platform in the market. And I think this causes the question of trust and neutrality.
But you mentioned an interesting thing with the expectations that you have when you start something like that, because we also see a really great chance for the small and medium-sized companies that in a traditional business play maybe a minor role from big picture point of view. But if they establish a new digital service out there, a service that is not around at the moment in this business, they can be the big fish then. They can be position themselves in a completely new way in this new business, even if they keep their smaller role in the old business. And this is a big chance. There are so many things left to be done, especially in the business-to-business sector. Where is the strength of the German small and medium-sized companies? And there's so much to do. And we hope that many, many more companies try and go into that direction and reposition themselves in this new business. I want to add one more thing why they are hesitant. I know this question is a long time ago but it fits here very well, because I think too many companies, and maybe especially the small and medium-sized companies, are hesitant because they are cursed by their own success. They built the successful companies years or usually decades ago. And it's really, really successful. As we know, we have so many hidden champions out there where they are world leader in their own thing. But this is still the old business, and it's yet still successful. But we are on the verge that every domain is getting digital, or more digital at least. And now is the time to think about repositioning yourself. But they are cursed by their success, because they did it that way. They did it very successfully, and they do it still successfully. And that's why they are hesitant to move into a new direction.
Yeah, very good point. And So they are kind of hesitant, but when we talk also to the SMEs, we find out that they are asking themselves, do we have the right talent? Do we have the right skills on board to do that? So yes, I understand platform. Yes, I understand I need to do something. Yes, I know the options. But hey, looking at my people I have here in the company, maybe the right entrepreneurial mindset and entrepreneurial skills are really missing. So to really approach this endeavor. So that's why some of those SMEs talking to venture builders or to Fraunhofers. How do you see this skill gap and how to overcome this skill gap for the SMEs?
Honestly, I know what you are talking about, but my personal experience, I would largely not agree that the talent is really missing. Because if you look closely, there are people that are willing to do things differently. They see what they could achieve in their domain, what they could do better. But our experience more or less shows that they are the management is a problem. Yeah, there are people, especially bottom up ideas. They are there, yeah, and they also have the will to do so. But especially the middle management is the problem. Maybe even the owners or the big management the C-level management is willing to do new things, and also the bottom levels are willing to do so, but the middle management wants to keep the business running as they've always run it, because they are still running it so successfully. So I know maybe there is some digital expertise missing, but you definitely can acquire that to do so. And as you said, the entrepreneurial thinking, this is the more important thing if you build something new. And I'm pretty sure there is this spirit in the German companies around there.
I agree. There is this spirit also in French companies, and the expertise, like you said, they know the market, they see opportunities, they see needs in the market. I think maybe what Matthias was referring to is also, I mean, if you're so you have an idea or you have identified a problem, and then we said, you need to act like a startup or create yourself a startup. This is another way of doing business. And maybe that's where, you know, those companies need to themselves bring their knowledge of the market and their network and their data maybe or whatever, and then lean on things like venture studios or other type of entities to help them process the startup building, to help them build a financing strategy, to help them understand platform business models, to help them then maybe build a technology or whatever. So it's kind of a, you know, there are skills in there, but there are also skills that need to be found somewhere else. And, you know, I guess those companies also need to be aware of that. I know what I know, and I don't know what I don't know, in fact, you know.
But it was really interesting to hear that the mid-sized companies are maybe held back by the middle management. But it's natural. The middle management don't want to release the talents they have in that department to go their own way, because they attracted or invested a lot in attracting those great talents. And their job is to make their department running very well and not to create a new business. So it's also natural because of the incentivations and motivations those middle managers have. But how to overcome this kind of dilemma?
I think where we might have these deficiencies, or where we also often see this, to lead the different areas, and maybe you also meant that, Matthias, before with your question, how to really establish the overall new idea of this platform thing and to really drive that, how to really establish this overall new customer experience of this thing, how to establish the overall technical platform. And that is something where many companies don't have the skills to the necessary level. We don't say they don't have the people that can develop themselves to that position, but it's not completely there yet to start. And that is something where, in particular, the top management has to identify the right candidates, see where also the gaps are, and then try to position that at a place in the company where the middle management can't kill it, so to say. Yeah, that sometimes mean to put it outside of that. Yeah, and that's something where we see the possibility that you can really get it running, but you have to identify the roadblocks and then see how that works. Yeah,
and again, this speaks for isolating the risk by creating a startup or a subsidiary, which is a startup.
So unfortunately, we're running in our end of time for this conversation, so we need to conclude. But a very, very, very good conversation and a lot of great points you mentioned about the chances, opportunities, and best practices of building platform ventures for the Mittelstand, for the SMEs. So we usually conclude asking our guests about the key advice they would give to maybe middle management or the CEOs of those companies. So what is maybe the most or some key learning you made in the last years you would like to give to the other executives?
Maybe I can start. I think at the highest level of abstraction, so to say, my advice would be not to hold back and to try these things from the overall perspective in Germany and Europe. We can't afford to let go all these chances to the US or to China. So there has to be companies. We need these companies that have the courage and are brave enough to do it. They, of course, they have a hard way to do it, but they should do it. And that comes probably with a second advice to politics and so on, because not every company can establish an ecosystem and a platform. So politics has to support that these things come into life in Germany, and whoever companies that are, whether it's new startups or it's the SMEs that have the right conditions. But we need to do that to be in the right position for our overall economy in the long term.
And unfortunately, that's almost exactly the same thing that I wanted to give as advice, Matthias. So, but sorry. I will add something in that direction. And I would give the advice to think about not only their own domain that they are currently working in, but think what you could achieve in maybe a completely different business domain with the skill set that your company and your employees already have. If you establish a completely new digital service based on the skill set that you already have, you could achieve great things in an area you are currently not thinking about. Do so.
A very good point. So being bold, being ambitious, but also thinking outside of the box you are in. I'm also happy that we can announce a second episode together with you and also the founders and initiators maybe of Caruso. You mentioned this data platform and you worked with and you're still working with, and we can talk about forming an alliance and what it takes to really make a data platform successful. So coming up soon in our podcast. From our point of view, thank you very much for joining this conversation. A lot of great insights. And yes, let's keep in touch. I think we have also between us a lot of things to share. And as we are in the same fields, helping and making helping companies and making them more competitive in this whole environment. Yeah, thank you again for joining. Very well done.
Thank you very much, Markus and Matthias. Very interesting. I enjoyed this very much. And I would have liked to talk a lot longer.
Thanks for having us.
It was a great discussion.